So this is the end of the first week of the KSFR Fun Drive, and I think we're still going to be going on Monday because we have not quite reached our monetary goal, which we need in order to actually keep this recording, keep this show, keep this beautiful radio station on the air. So give us a call at 428-1393 and let us stay on the air another 6 months. We come to you every 6 months and ask you to make listener-supported radio really listener-supported, because you, the listener, are in fact supporting it by calling in 428-1393. And we're going to sweeten it for you to call by offering tickets to various movie theaters today. I have here in the cafe with me Raji Mandelkorn. She is co-producer of the documentary Muscle Shoals, which is opening tonight at The Screen, the wonderful movie theater on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. It's tonight at 7. Raji will be doing the introduction to the film and showing it to all of us. So if you give a call right now, you can get a pair of tickets to the screening tonight. You can actually get tickets that can be used at any screening all year at The Screen at the Santa Fe University, so you can go to Muscle Shoals another night. But it's a wonderful documentary. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
How did it come to pass? I mean, Muscle Shoals is a place in Alabama. It's a place where some of the most amazing hit recordings of really the entire 20th century were made. How did this little town in the middle of nowhere, Alabama, come to have one of the finest recording studios that produced just hit after hit after hit?
That's a really good question. A lot of people have different ideas about it. It's certainly a really special place, and the film even goes into the Native American legend that surrounds the area and the history of a woman, a singing woman coming from the river and singing songs to the people, and that being the music that they made. But there were also some really talented, driven individuals behind it, especially one guy, Rick Hall, who really just lit the fire under everybody else and got him going. And then there were a lot of songwriters and people like Jerry Wexler heard good things coming out of there and started sending some really big acts down there.
Now, he was a New York record producer.
That's right. That's right. He sent Aretha Franklin down there, and she wasn't even getting great sounds from other big studios, but when she got down there, she finally got sort of that funky sound that she's known for.
And that Muscle Shoals turns out to be known for. I mean, what's one of the things that's so beautiful about this documentary is so many of the songs that certainly people of my generation and older grew up with, and younger grew up with, were made in this studio at Muscle Shoals with a band, the studio band, who were some incredibly fine players, super funky rhythm section, keyboards, and so on. And they were these, you know, small handful of white Alabama country boys who could play like nobody's business and played behind some of the greatest black stars of the 60s and 70s.
That's right. And some of them even say in the movie they were teenagers at the time when they got their first hits.
Yeah. Now, for example, one of the stories that I loved in this film, and we're not going to give away the whole film, ladies and gentlemen, because you absolutely have to go see it. It's one of those can't miss it films that's in Santa Fe. But one of the stories that I love is the story of Percy Sledge.
Yeah.
He came from the cotton fields. Tell us his story a little bit.
According to him, he would sing out loud in the fields, in the forest, to the mountains. And then later he was working in the hospital, and he would sing to make people feel good. And later on he was sort of discovered and brought into the studio, which there weren't many black people going into the studio at that time, and recorded the hit everybody knows and loves, When a Man Loves a Woman.
Yeah, and it became an instant hit. But the thing that's so fascinating about this film is that you have got this guy, Rick Hall, who himself was a musician, who had a really, really rough childhood, both in terms of poverty and his family situation, and had this driving ambition both to achieve excellence and to get out of poverty. And he had this instinct and also this just drive of doing it over and over and over again until you get the hit. He was a hit maker. How? What goes into this? I mean, maybe it's not even possible to explain it.
That's part of his magical genius that I don't claim to understand. I've suggested songs to him, and he's listening from the very beginning. Is it a hit? You know, you start with a hit.
Right.
Yeah.
And Aretha Franklin was one of those people. She'd been signed with CBS Records for 5 years, had played before all of these super highly produced arrangements. Nothing was happening. And this guy, Jerry Wexler, in New York City, was just waiting to pounce when her contract expired. He signed her, like, the next day, took her down to Alabama, and boom, she's got not only hit singles, but hit albums.
That's right. That's right. There's some more drama and interesting things that happened with Aretha Franklin, both down there in Muscle Shoals and later with the Swampers in New York.
Yeah.
But I won't give it all away right now in this interview.
No, exactly. Well, she was and is a real character. And one of the things that's nice about this movie is a lot of the people, I would say most of the people who were musicians and both the studio musicians and the great artists whom we know are still alive, and a lot of them are in the film.
I'm sorry?
A lot of the, like Aretha Franklin talks in your film.
She's interviewed in the film. Also, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Alicia Keys, who actually came down to Muscle Shoals with this film and recorded something incredible. I also won't give that away.
Right. Wilson Pickett.
Wilson Pickett, that's archival interview material.
Oh, okay.
But so is Etta James.
That's right.
And Steve Winwood, Clarence Carter.
Right. So many just incredible artists that are in this movie. And it's also, I have to say, a beautifully shot and edited movie. I mean, it's just extraordinary. It opened at Sundance, is that right?
That's correct. A world premiere at Sundance this past January 2013.
And just opened, a week or two ago in New York and is now in Santa Fe.
Yep, it is spreading to theaters across the nation as we speak, and this is basically the second week, and Santa Fe got it early by my understanding. It was supposed to be the end of the month. It's getting it as early as some of the other big cities. And that's because Brent over there curating the screen just had to have it, so I'm really grateful to him for his taste and for getting it here.
He's once again one of the most amazing film curators we've ever had, and in fact John Bowman, who's one of the other amazing film curators of the city, is sitting at the next table, and he's going to be here in a few minutes here in the Santa Fe Banking Company. It's the KSFR Front Drive. And the number, if you want to score a pair of tickets to this film tonight, or in fact you can use it to see any film at the screen on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, is 428-1393, 428-1393. And give a call, get a pair of tickets, and let's see, I think we've got a few thank yous. Can we have a little report from the control room?
We'd like to thank Freya Diamond.
Thank you.
And Loie Fechtow.
Oh, thank you, Loie. Thank you, both of you. And let's get a whole bunch more thank yous, a whole bunch more calls. 428-1393. We're talking about the film Muscle Shoals, about the studio and studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And it's an interesting view also, although, I mean, maybe there was a lot more of it that didn't get into the film. I would imagine that editing this film, there's so much fabulous material that you didn't get to use.
There is so much. There's so much. One thing that was really just a shame is this song, I'm Your Puppet, which probably many listeners know.
Yep.
It's written by Dan Penn, and I think also Spooner Oldham. And Dan Penn is one of the songwriters. He's in the film, and he's responsible for a lot of good things that came out of Muscle Shoals, but they collaborated in the studio, and there was this amazing scene of them playing and singing together that song, I'm Your Puppet, in the studio now. And that's just one of many things that didn't make it in.
Yeah.
But maybe on the special features DVD.
We'll I see. Certainly hope so. I mean, I could see 12 hours of special features on this film if it were offered. It's such a beautiful look, and that's an example of it, into the creative process that was taking place inside the studio. I mean, I think those of us who aren't musicians and songwriters, as I'm not, you know, you think, oh, well, somebody writes a song, and then they bring in the sheet music, and then you play it, and you make a good recording, and that's it. But so much of the actual creativity was happening in real time in the studio.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a professional musician either, but from the way they all explain it, you know, they had something to start with. Somebody brought something in, and then these musicians contributed what was their style and their listening and their ear, and that's part of why these white guys from Alabama had this much bigger sound. And I just want to say that the movie kind of worked like that too. We ended up pulling in different talents from all over, like the director of photography was from LA, the editor's from New York, we're from Santa Fe, the director's Colorado, a lot of crew from Nashville, and everybody kind of came together, and we were like a unique, small enough style of production that everybody kind of got to put in some of their own, maybe a lot more of their own creative style than is traditional on a shoot. And I think that that's really benefited the film in the same way that a lot of these hits have benefited from that.
Very, very interesting. The film is the documentary Muscle Shoals that opens tonight at the Screen. Now, the Santa Fe University of Art and Design used to be called the College of Santa Fe, and you studied film at the College of Santa Fe. Is that correct?
My major was actually this really small, unique program called Documentary Studies, but I crossed campus all the time over into the film department.
So Documentary Studies means what? You're studying documentaries writing, but not making them? Or
writing, photography, and film.
Ah, okay.
So it wasn't saying that documentary is documentary film. There's documentary writing, there's documentary photography
right.
as well. So we studied all of those mediums. Yeah.
And how did you get involved in this film?
This small town, I was doing freelance documentary work, particularly with nonprofits and for good causes. And the producer who lives here asked a mutual friend, was just starting to roll the ball on the project, and just said, I need somebody for the film. And I was sort of fresh out of college and started just basically helping do some research from my computer at home on the internet, you know, but I knew I was going to get way into it. And the more I learned about Muscle Shoals, oh, I'm going to go there. I'm going to be working on these shoots.
And you did.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've been on all the shoots there, and that's another home over there now.
And so, and that was what, 4 years of production?
4 years of production. Yeah. And now we're almost finishing our fifth year of release, promotion, distribution, international festivals, etc.
Amazing. So, yeah. How did it affect the people in the town? I mean, obviously those musicians, those studio musicians who at the beginning were called the Swampers, most of those guys are still there. Rick Hall is still there. But then there's just like all the people in the town who are watching film crews come in and out, and all these musicians who are featured in the film.
You know, it's like some people say that they noticed, but they're just country folk and they didn't make a big deal about it. And some people said they had no idea. It depends who you talk to. But I will say it's the South, and people are really sweet and kind and generous, and were all along the way.
We're talking to Raji Mandelkorn about the film Muscle Shoals. And once again, you can get tickets to this film, and you can just simply contribute to KSFR in any amount by calling 428-1393, 428-1393. And if you're coming home from work, do not have an accident, ladies and gentlemen. Pull over for a moment and just call this number really quick, 428-1393. It's interesting. I mean, there's quite a bit of drama in the film, and I mean, alliances and people coming together and people breaking up and so on. And again, you got to see the film to really get the whole picture. picture, but one of the things that I thought was so interesting is that Dwayne Allman came in and the Allman Brothers were playing, and you notice, you see in it that at that time, I mean, I guess, you know, late 60s, early 70s, that kind of southern white, I mean, you know, you had the civil rights movement going on, and Martin Luther King, and, you know, then he was shot and everything, and all this was going on. And these southern white Alabamans, prejudice against black people was exceeded only by prejudice against long-haired hippie white guys like the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, that's something that Jimmy Johnson says, and I guess that was times down there in Alabama. I don't know for sure, but yeah, he said those long-haired hippies it was not good to be seen with them. Almost worse than with a black person in the South.
And here you have all these completely unprejudiced musicians. I mean, there's some, like, skepticism on the part of some of the black musicians who come down and say, this is our band. But then once they start playing together, they see how amazing they are. The white musicians, you know, everybody plays together. Everybody is in this intense act of creativity. And then they go out and they're looked upon kind of askance by the public of that town, of that area.
I guess so. I mean, I don't have too many stories of people having, like, a hard time after for having recorded that music. But I do think what you can say is undeniable is what an effect that music had on the nation, on the country, on the way people felt about race relations, whether or not they even knew that they were having that, whether or not they knew the music was having that effect on them.
It did, in fact. That's very interesting. Yeah, music as a major part of the transformation that happened, or that we wish it happened more during the civil rights movement. Southern rock really was born at Muscle Shoals, but Rick Hall didn't like it.
Yeah, he had his own thing he was doing, which was more R&B and later pop. And so that Southern rock thing, the Swampers ran with it, though. And
right.
Leonard Skinner. It wasn't just the Allman Brothers. Yeah, Leonard Skinner is.
Right, right. Very interesting. Well, it's a very rich and beautifully done movie. And I think one of the things that was really profound about it for me, besides the fact that there's so much of our American musical history and the kind of context in these movements of civil rights and so on, but just in the way the film is shot and edited, and the stories that are told, like the story you told at the beginning about this Native American legend about the singing woman in the river, you really get the sense of the role that the land and the landscape and the water play in the formation of the music of that area. And it's almost like the people who played in Muscle Shoals were doing things that they couldn't have done in a different studio because of the land.
I think you're right. And I think it's not just the land and the water and the feel of it, but also the history that's in a place.
The movie is Muscle Shoals, and Rajiv Mandelkorn is the co-producer of the film. So you worked on the production of the film, and now you're basically helping to publicize it as it goes around the country. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I was the line producer during production, which basically means organizing, setting up, handling the shoots, the time and the money.
Yeah. Well, we hope that everybody goes to see it and that it is a great hit. How have the people who were in it responded to it?
They all love it. Oh my gosh, everybody loves it. I mean, there has not been a bad review, particularly from those main characters. Everybody's just feels like it's about time that this story was told.
Yeah.
And everybody agrees that it was told well.
Yeah.
You know, I studied documentary, and I was continually surprised on the making of this film about how much you could push documentary and how much you could just really go for great, you know, not round any corners and not not save time.
Yeah.
You know, it's really done nicely.
Which is, as you say, exactly what Rick Hall was doing in the studio.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Amazing. Well, I want to congratulate you, Raji, and your directors and producers and everybody involved in this wonderful film. And Santa Fe will have the chance to see the film tonight, and it'll have a run at the screen, so it'll be there over the coming days and
definitely
we hope weeks.
Through this weekend, and we do believe also next weekend.
Cool. Well, the number, if you would like to both get tickets to this film and contribute to the KSFR Fund Drive, is 428-1393, 428-1393. And the toll-free number is 866-907-5737, 866-907-KSFR. Thank you, Raji, so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, my pleasure.
So do we have a little report from the control room?
Yes, we do have some people to thank. Susan Harris.
Thank you, Susan.
Suzanne Lederer.
Oh, thank you, Suzanne Lederer.
Lederer, thank you.
Lederer, if it's German.
I love how small this town is. Oh, I know them. Oh, yeah, sure. Thank you.
Well,
I'll have to thank them later.
It is a small town.
Tom Romero.
Dan, thank you so much. Thank you to all of you. And let's keep the telephone ringing, 428-1393, 428-1393. And I would like now to introduce John Bowman and Stephen Rubin, who are with the Jean Cocteau Theater, newly reopened as of fairly recently. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Mary
Charlotte. Thanks for having us on.
It's great to have you on the air. And what is your role? I feel like, I mean, John Bowman, you were with the Santa Fe Film Festival for so long.
10 years.
And then everybody thought that you disappeared and went to Kentucky.
I have a farm in Kentucky, and, I was had retired from New Mexico Magazine and was kind of enjoying the retired life until George called and had this dream of resurrecting the Cocteau and asked me if I would kind of help him to make it happen. And I told him I would, but I did put a time limit on it that I'm doing this for a year or two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you will...
I don't want to totally get back into, the frenetic, high-stress lifestyle for the next 20 years or whatever, but it was such a good project and such a nice ideal that it seemed like it should happen because the place had been closed for 7 years.
I know. And it's such a wonderful theater. It's a great place to see films. It's very intimate and just a good space, and they do have some truly excellent popcorn also.
Oh, mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
From an Amish farm. It's the kernels we use are from an Amish farm.
No
in,
way.
Yeah. In Indiana.
In Indiana.
Yeah, non-GMO, yeah, non-GMO. And all and organic and all that good stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite amazing. So you, John, are the curator at the...
Yes, I'm doing the booking and then general manager also.
And so how are you choosing the films? You're doing some things that are slightly different from the other theaters in town.
You bet. I mean, that was part of what I had the conversation with George about when he hired me, was that it didn't make sense to try to be the Screen or the CCA, because both of those halls are great halls and they have really interesting programming. And so it did not make sense for us to do a carbon copy kind of duplication of what they were already doing so well. And so what made sense for us was to try something different. And in fact, George was interested in trying something different because his interests are really in genres and in science fiction and fantasy and horror and martial arts and all those other areas. And so what I've been doing is programming primarily titles that are independent titles, but that are not quite in the same vein, in that strict art house vein.
And so what kind of genres are you really favoring at this moment?
Well, a lot depends on what the public goes for. And I have to say that their tastes are very eclectic. I mean, one week we can have a horror film and it'll have five people there, and the next week there's a horror film and there's 50. So it really is... I can't discern necessarily any great trends other than obviously people like the movies that are better movies, and the one thing I have seen is that The market has changed a bit from the last time I was involved a few years back, in the sense that so many of the titles go straight to video or quickly to the Netflix and streaming, and so the titles that we play, there's a very small narrow window left for theatrical release. It's narrowed. It makes it a lot more slippery than it used to be.
Now, there's new theatrical releases, but some of the things you're doing is also showing kind of vintage films.
Yeah, we're trying to do a lot of vintage films because this is a town where people know their film history and they have a really solid background and taste in the classics. And so in particular, when we see that there's a distributor that has a title that's been restored or they've done a new print or presented in some spectacular new way visually or enhanced the sound, whatever, that's the kind of thing that that we would go after in particular.
428-1393 is the phone number, and we are giving away pairs of tickets to the Jean Cocteau Theater, thanks to you, very generous gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we gave away tickets to the screen during the first half of the hour, now during the second half of the hour, we are giving some tickets to the Jean Cocteau. And if people take them by calling 428-1393, 428-1393. And your name will be at the box office, so we don't even have to mail them to you and so on. So it's a very sweet deal.
Yes. And these are tickets for the Guild. That's a program where we'll be doing the 21st to the 4th. And I don't know if you've seen the Guild on the Internet. It's probably the most popular web series of all time on the Internet. 69 million views, 6 seasons that it's run. It's a comedy that Felicia Day created. And is created totally independently and owns about a group of friends who are all members of an online gaming society called the Knights of Good. And they're challenged by the evil guys led by Will Wheaton, who's the head of the Axis of Anarchy. and they have different adventures. But what's interesting about what we'll be doing with it is that while it's been seen 69 million times online, this is only the second time ever been presented on a big screen. And then the second part that's the most interesting is that all the cast members, Felicia, Jeff Lewis, Sandeep Parikh, Amy Okuda, Robin Thorson, all the leading characters as well as the directors and writers will all be Skyping in each night of that we present this series in its entirety from the 21st to the 4th of October. There'll be chances for people to talk to their idols or the people that they've been watching on the little screen and see them, not only what their work looks like on a big screen, but themselves.
So we're using this to kind of test, you know, the whole idea of in addition to regular movie screenings of things like this, of web series and live Skype. So this is the first time we'll be doing that, but certainly not the last.
Yeah, not the last. I mean, in fact, a lot of what we're going to do is in that kind of a vein of not necessarily just even presenting traditional feature films, but we're going to do some television, because a lot of some of the best things that are being created these days is coming out of cable television.
No kidding.
Yeah. You know,
so good writing and solid work.
Yeah.
And local stuff too.
The other thing about the work that's being produced on television is that so much of this good work is series. And so a series is either 13 or 22 or 23 episodes per season, and these go on season after season. Mm-hmm. So it's like 19th century serialized novels just go on and on.
Well, the great thing about showing series and you know, from TV and from the internet is obviously it's great to see it on the big screen. You know, if the only format otherwise is seeing it at home, that is certainly a reason to get people into the theaters. So
now when people are making movies that are going to be seen primarily on the web.
Yes.
Not even on TV. Most people's screens are, you know, like my computer screen right now is smaller than my TV. So if something is meant to be seen on this, it's smaller than a, you know, 25 or 35 inch television, or even bigger, which some people have. And excuse me. And so are they making things that are formatted for a small screen when they shoot? I mean, do they look...
No, not necessarily, because, you know, nowadays the people have varying kind of setups. Some people have home theater setups, and they have televisions that they're using for their viewing of the web, and the televisions phones. May be like 108 inches wide, that sort of thing. And so the creators are having to be aware of it. But, of course, that someone making something for the web, it's a much more of a shoestring operation generally than it would be on television. And so this series reflects it. Each season, the episodes are maybe 8 to 10 minutes long. And by the end of the whole season, they've collected like an hour and a half, that sort of thing.
But I would say certainly in the past few years, and it gets... This gets better all the time with the technology of digital filmmaking, is that it is a lot easier than it used to be to have to shoot, you know, okay, you know it's going to be a web series, but to be able to shoot technically so that it could be blown up, you know, in the past that, you know, before Letterboxd, that's where Letterboxd came from, it was two completely different things, shooting a TV and movie, and now that's not really the case. The same cameras that you can use for your web series could be used in Hollywood.
You know, exactly. Very interesting. I saw a little documentary once when I still had cable on Turner Classic Movies about how when Letterboxd, which are those very wide films that are that you see in the movie theater where the screen is much more wide than it is tall, are edited for television.
You lose.
And you lose. I mean, they showed, I think it was like Ben-Hur or something, where you've got four horsemen and two of the horsemen are completely cut out.
Ben-Hur and Lawrence of Arabia are the best examples.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not as dire a problem anymore, because TV used to be shot in the square shape of your TV. But now pretty much all TVs are the same rectangle as a screen.
Very interesting. 428-1393, and you can get a pair of tickets to the Guild. Now, tell us again when this is screening.
That's going to be on the 21st of October through the 24th, which is right after we present the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. So we'll have the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival that weekend of the 18th through the 20th, and then the Monday through Thursday, the Guild in its entirety, all 806 minutes of it. But each night is about an hour and a half to 2 hours long.
Very interesting. So is there a kind of, age group demographic that this film is being watched by, or that this series, The Guild, is being watched by?
I've seen people come in and buy tickets from all age groups, but in particular it's found its audience with younger viewers.
20s
and so
younger.
The people in their 20s and college students, high school students seem to be really up on it.
And George Martin fans.
And George Martin fans. Why is that?
Nerds.
It's about the show is about nerds, geeks, and such. So.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as I say, nerds and geeks are the only salvation of the world that we have left to hope for.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. If anyone ever calls me a nerd or geek, I compliment. Some people might think, yeah. That's a good point, Mary Charlotte.
428-1393. We're talking to John Bowman and Stephen Rubin of the Jean Cocteau Theater. And there's another thing that's going on in films, which is so weird. You've got these gigantic home theater systems that people are using with 49-inch TVs. You've got movie theaters where there's still, I mean... It's not huge at the Jean Cocteau, but you're also sitting very close to it, so the effect of it is quite large. Or in the multiplexes or at the screen or at the CCA, you've got these huge theaters. And then you've got this other phenomenon of people watching entire movies on their phone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and there are studies about how actually with headphones, that's very important, that you can get drawn in a personal way to a movie more with your portable device and headphones than on a big screen. I used to...
Really?
When I was traveling a lot to other film festivals and such, I would, on my iPod, I would watch Lawrence of Arabia, and as much as it sounds like the worst thing ever to watch that in anything but a giant screen, there was a way, having been familiar with the movie, that because it's just you and the screen and the headphones, there's an intensity that, you know...
I would probably take the different track than Steven, because I've always been in favor of watching things on the big screen and in an audience environment, because particular comedies, I mean, without that laugh track and the people around you reacting, you don't get the same vibe off of it.
I'm in no way vouching for watching on your home device more than in the theater. It's just interesting.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But the group interaction, certainly, that's what makes going to the movies why you want to do it, and that's what we're aiming to do at the Jean Cocteau, is have a real community, personal feel.
You know, besides the films, one of the things that we're doing as well, not as often as the movies, of course, but we're trying to do some live events, and we've had some readings with different authors and a concert or two, and I think as the weeks ahead progress, we'll probably see more of that, because people have liked it. They liked the intimacy of the space, and the performers have enjoyed it. They said they liked seeing the people's faces and hearing themselves perform, and so.
Yeah, we had a little a stage built that we set up when we needed it, so.
Very nice. I mean, just getting back to, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but just getting back to this thing on the phone, watching movies on a very small screen. I mean, one of the things that I love about movies is that you're watching actors act. They're larger than life, and the subtlety of their acting and just the way they might move one eye or their facial expressions, that's what makes a great actor. Can you see that on a small screen?
Not nearly as much, obviously. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I guess there are certain things that if it's just you holding the device close to your face that you might see as far as facial tics, but obviously you're going to miss a lot of the rest of the action and such.
Yeah, although, you know, with high def, I think it's really pushed a lot more of the actors towards plastic surgery because you can see everything.
Yeah, things can show up. Yeah. I think handheld devices really allow a way, once you've seen a movie in the big screen, to be able to study it more minutely, I'd say, maybe.
The number at the KSFR pledge drive is 428-1393, and I think it's been a little bit slow. I think we've got another thank you, and if we have a report for... Oh, good. Nick, tell us.
We'd like to thank Linda.
Linda, thank you.
She also would like to say that Charles Maynard, who is in the 4 o'clock hour, is her inspiration.
Yay! Charles Maynard is a deeply wonderful person, and we had him on the air the other day talking about his new book, which is called Thriving Through Devastating Illness, and he's a physician who's been on really both sides of the stethoscope, as he puts it, and he's also a member of the KSFR News Department. You two have been on this show many times, John Bowman and Stephen Rubin. Why should our listeners call right now and contribute to public radio?
To support Mary Charlotte and KSFR, and for a chance to win some free tickets to the Jean Cocteau. That's the thing.
Well, I think that, you know, public radio, it's a different medium, but it's really similar to what we do at the Cocteau, and that is providing alternatives, having eclectic programming.
Community.
Giving people choices, and for your listeners, it's really the same, and it's a matter of if you want to have everything spoon-fed and all homogenized and mechanical and plastic, or do you want to have that diversity?
Yeah. Like I said, the thing that we really strive to do, in addition to all the programming and the popcorn and all that, is provide, all that helps to provide the experience of, you know, it's relevant that we've been talking about handheld devices and all the alternatives, because as a theater now, you have to think of what can we do to make it worthwhile to come in the theater. And I think, you know, community and all that is a big, big part of it. Personal touch. You know, after the movie, talk to the staff about it, and before, you know, make it an event and a personal connection. And obviously, in its way, KSFR does that too.
What is your involvement in the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival?
You know, we've been working with them in terms of, we'll be one of the main venues for their series coming up here on the 18th through the 20th. They're also doing things at the CCA and the Screen and the Lensic, so they are truly cross town. And I noticed that for what they've programmed at our hall, it's pretty big mix. I mean, not only some American independent films, but some international titles. There's a lot of shorts paired mm-hmm. with the features,
local stuff,
some local docs, and then they also have some masterclass programs. Chris Ayers, who did Smoke Signals,
One of my favorite movies.
Yeah, he's...
and who runs the College of Santa Fe film?
He's got a new screenplay for a upcoming feature film, and he's going to do live readings at the hall with other performers of that future project. And then they're going to do a master class in writing with George R. R. Martin, who's the owner of our hall, as well as Kirk Ellis, who did...
John Adams.
John Adams.
Kirk Ellis did... John Adams and George Martin did Game of Thrones.
That's correct, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see those two together.
Of town, but, you know, obviously pretty illustrious residents.
Yeah. Illustrious residents of town, indeed. This is quite a town for film, for a town of, what do we have now, 80,000 people or something like that?
Less, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to that event to see those two different kind of writers and see what they offer up as far as inspiration and you know.
4281393. The phones have been very, very slow this hour, and I don't understand it.
No.
Oh, what can you say?
We need KSFR deserves your help.
Yeah.
I called the other day.
Well, thank you. And so many of the people who've been on this show have called, and we're very grateful. And I try not to take it personally.
No, I mean, you know, times are tough.
But I do take it personally. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a personal insult to me, seriously.
Well, don't. We can't allow that because
if you
we
don't
love
call.
Mary Charlotte. So call, call.
No, I mean, I worked so hard.
You know?
Yeah, even keel, that's right.
They do work hard, yeah. I was excited to see that a family friend, Frank Katz, is the new board press.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful board president. We've got an amazing board right now and really terrific staff at KSFR. I'm very grateful to be working with such wonderful people.
Yeah.
The number is 428-1393. Stephen Rubin, you are also known as Jules.
I am.
How many names do you have?
Well, Jules has his own alter ego, who is Otis Career. So that's, as far as endorsed names, that's it. Stephen Rubin, Jules, and Otis Career.
Okay.
Anything else is made up by others.
And attributed to you. So you are doing this thing called Jules Works, which is a monthly variety show, and we've had you on the air a number of times.
Yeah,
about
the Jules Works Follies. It's a live monthly variety show that is now going into its 19th show on the 26th of October at the. This venue will be at Teatro Paraguas.
And nice.
And we do have this time Joe West will be doing some spoken word with us, and you know there are certain performers that do things each month, our Monty Python stuff, poets, etc., and then at least one new performer each time, and music, Greg Turner, and then hopefully for November we'll actually on a Sunday be doing it at the Cocteau.
Oh, good.
How that works, and which because I think it does fit in well with John and George's mission before I ever got involved of, in addition to movies, doing, you know, like we did Greg and Steve Terrell's concert, doing live stuff, so what better fit than a live, completely variety show?
Yeah, okay, well, excellent, and we'll, of course, let people know about that on Speaking of the Arts, which happens on Friday mornings from 8:30 to 9. I want to ask each of you, what are your, do you have any favorite movies of all time?
Sure.
Yeah.
How do you pick?
I know, how do you pick? But I mean, you could say any number, but like, what are some of your favorite movies?
Well, since we already talked about Lawrence of Arabia, that obviously is one. One that I really am sincere about, even and some people chastise me for saying it, but as far as a technical achievement, Titanic is really something to see on the big screen. And then, obviously, of course, there's much more independent stuff that we love.
Yes.
Yeah. Miller's Crossing, that's the third one I'll say. Miller's Crossing is one of the best movies ever made.
I think all of my favorites are the ones that I saw when I was a kid, because the very first movies that I saw on Saturdays and that got me hooked into the whole medium, and a lot of them were like Ray Harryhausen's pictures with mechanical dinosaurs and King Kong-like devices.
Clash of the Titans.
And Gulliver or Aladdin or different kind of Medusas, and you know, and so that's probably why I feel really comfortable programming what we're programming at the Cocteau, because when I was a kid I was already kind of pre-programmed to like that kind of stuff. It was so different from everyday life.
Yeah, good point.
I do think part of the mission with as far as what programs we'll choose, and John is definitely open to input from others, is to complement what other theaters show in town, is to have stuff that tends to be more on the fun side and a relief, and you know, that the audiences seem to be reacting to, in addition to all the deep stuff and the troubles and pains of the world that can be well documented in film is to have stuff that really is more of an escape and more enjoyable, you know.
Yeah, I mean, where was I? I think this was something I learned in college where they were talking about how during the Great Depression everybody wanted fantasy films and things that took you totally away from your reality.
Yeah.
And then during times of prosperity, like the 1950s, you had On the Waterfront and things that were really heavy duty.
And, you know, that the Depression era was the golden age for musicals. And that was the same kind of thing. I mean, the musicals were that escape at that time.
Unfortunately, we all know the troubles of the reality of the world, but it's more fun to indulge in some of the livelier, more escapist, creative aspects. And obviously, as programming, we're going to do all kinds of stuff we've been doing, and we'll do more of that spiritual kind of stuff that always goes well in Santa Fe.
Right.
Buddhist-themed, the yoga movie, that stuff.
Excellent.
Did well at the Film Center, and we'll do well at the Cocktail.
I think my favorite movies are... Not that you asked, but...
I was about to ask.
Casablanca and Team America.
Yes, anything Trey and Matt, yeah.
Anything by Trey and Matt. Yeah, also the
Team
South
America
Park movie.
Is actually a guilty pleasure of mine, too.
Yeah, we were talking about Trey and Matt the other day at the theater, and John said, Team America.
Yeah.
Bleep, yeah.
Exactly. And, yeah, I don't know how it is that Trey Parker and Matt Stone continue... year after year to come up, week after week during the South Park season to come up with such amazing material.
Well, as they say, because they just keep making each other laugh. I just saw a 60 Minutes interview they did more about Book of Mormon, and then there's the 6 days to air, I think it's called, about, you know, they finished Book of Mormon, did all this big stuff, and then they had 6 days to go back to California and make the next season of South Park.
Right.
But they say, you know, in addition to still remaining confused about the world and needing to make fun or light of it, and that sometimes deep way is they just make each other laugh, which makes people like Mary Charlotte, me and John Bowman and many others laugh.
Yep. And the Book of Mormon, I actually
I did
this huge
Lucky.
Major splurge, which was about a year ago. Scored a pair of tickets to the Book of Mormon when it was touring in Los Angeles and made my way out there for a weekend.
I do remember.
It was worth every minute and penny and everything else.
I do remember, in fact, today, just a little bit earlier, I was thinking about how years ago I had been trying to connect Mary Charlotte to Trey and Matt, and that still could be a dream that we may see come true sometime of somehow getting them on the show and maybe even having something relevant of theirs that we can do at the Cocktail.
Ah, now Who there's knows? An idea. But I actually, more, I shouldn't admit this, but I'm going to admit this. I spend more time than I should thinking about what I would ask Trey Parker and Matt Stone if I ever had the opportunity to meet them. Because the only thing that you really want to say to them is like, oh my God, you guys are like total geniuses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
4281393. I think that the phones are ringing and we love hearing the sound of the ringing phone. Let's try to get, we've got 5 minutes left in the show. Let's try to get five more phone calls. One per minute. We do have enough people on deck ready to answer phones. 4281393. And seriously, this is listener-supported public radio, and we need our listeners to support us. It's just as simple as that. So it doesn't matter what our dollar amount is, but five more calls by the end of the hour would be so awesome. And thank you so much, everybody who is out there in Radioland listening to this show and who listens in the morning. Maybe if you heard it in the morning and you didn't have a chance to call, this would be a great time to do so. And we also want to send kudos out to our friend Diego Mulligan, who passed away on the 21st of June. I think it was the full moon and the summer solstice.
Wow.
And he went on to the next radio studio in the sky. And so I've been dedicating all the afternoon shows to Diego.
No. Great.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, Mary Charlotte?
Yes.
Of the as much of the years of the Santa Fe Film Festival from a few years ago when we were involved, can you remember what might be, and John, you too, what might be some of your favorites that you still think of as movies that to get us out of the Hollywood realm?
Yeah, there were some terrific movies that I've seen. One of them, I don't remember the name of it, but it was about some people who are in a family that's in an accident, and they go to heaven, but they're told that it's not their time yet, so they come back to Earth.
I know what you mean.
And they become incredibly nice people, and they are shunned by the sort of pious fundamentalists around them.
It
what
had
was
a strange
the name of that
title,
film?
But I can't think of it, but yeah. It was my last year. Yeah.
That was a great movie. And then there was one called Expiration Date,
yeah.
Which was about a young man, 25 years old, who was a Native American guy living in Seattle, and both his father and his grandfather had died on their 25th birthdays, and both of them had been hit by milk trucks. And he was really afraid of dying because he's about... It's like the movie takes place during the 10 days leading up to his 25th birthday.
Yeah, that was a good one, too.
Yeah.
And he has to keep an eye out for the milk trucks.
And he has to keep an eye out for the milk trucks. And he meets this woman who is the love interest, who is the most interesting combination of appealing and irritating that I've ever seen on screen. Yeah. So,
how about you, John? What do you remember?
Oh, you know, all those titles. It's hard for me to pick them out because I feel kind of like parental toward it, and so it's almost like
you don't want to have favorites.
Yeah, siblings. Do you like the
parents? I don't really have an answer either, so that's part of why I asked.
Yeah, well, if you gave me a few minutes, I could probably think of another 10 or 20, including some terrific documentaries that only come to film festivals, and that's one of the reasons to go to film festivals. I think
is that, and I also think part of what certainly. The stuff I most remember, and not just as the programmer, but is the people you get to meet, the filmmakers you get to meet. Obviously, for John and I to feel like we maybe we're able to help expose audiences and nurture filmmakers, but even attending other festivals, you know, to be able to see the people that make the films. And so I think all the festivals in town help us do that. And we are, as the Jean Cocteau, we are going to host some of the other film festivals.
Yeah, no, we're certainly trying to work with a lot of them.
Yeah.
4281393 is the number, and we've just got about a minute and a half left until we go. John Bowman is the general manager and curator at the Jean Cocteau.
Yeah, do the booking.
Yeah, and it's just so great to have you back in town.
Yeah, it's like I said, it was a kind of a mission that I couldn't really refuse.
Yeah.
It's a happy surprise.
Yeah.
Well, mission I can't refuse. And Stephen Rubin, who is also at the Jean Cocteau and wearing a number of hats.
Yeah.
And it's just great to have you both here on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I never would have thought that we'd be doing this again, John and I together, or necessarily even working in the theater. So it's been thanks to Game of Thrones and George Martin's support of the community. It's been great to be able to do this.
Okay, great.
And thank you.
Well, thank you both, and we have one more report from the control room, I think.
That's correct. We would like to thank Daniel and Helen Wildman Meehan, who have a kind of two-part dedication. Part of their they are in support of the Sunday Blues and in support of the Jean Cocteau.
Yay, good. And we would like to just make sure you give a call, and we still have these tickets.
We got some more.
The Guild, which is happening at the Jean Cocteau, and the dates are October 21st to 24th at the Jean Cocteau Theater. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafemc. And we are on Twitter at Radio Cafe MC. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. That's just a lot of verbiage, but never mind. Stay tuned for the BBC. 4281393 is the number, and our wonderful volunteers are standing by in the KSFR studios. And thank you so much for calling, for supporting this show, for supporting this station. Hasta la vista.